You're listening to an FX PhD podcast from fxphd.com.
Hi, and welcome to this week's FX PhD-OD. John and Mike with you. How's it going, my friend?
Good, sir. How are you?
Oh, absolutely fantastic. Excited to have launched another term.
Yeah, it's our 30th term. How cool is that? 30 terms of PhD. So, yeah. And, you know, I'm very proud of that.
Yes. Pretty amazing.
It is. It's extraordinary. As we will be, you'll be able to see in the O Week video, we've done a bunch of things because of it being our 30th term. But one of the things that we've done, which I'm also really proud of, is really increase the number of 300 level courses available this term. Now, this is direct response to, I think, what, 2 terms ago, John, when we had some people saying we can get the easy stuff, we want to move into the harder stuff. And so that's filtered through as to our planning. And we're responding with, I think, 4 new 300-level courses. Now, this is, of course, in addition to all the Vault courses and other standard courses that are on repeat. But that many 300-level courses, we're really proud to offer that.
Yeah, we certainly are, and very happy to have a great lineup of profs to help teach those courses.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Let's start out with one that I've been really working on for probably several terms to get working out, and that's our new advanced matte painting course, which the Epic 2000 plus course suggestion thread, as well as numerous responses in the surveys I pointed out today in the forums, as well as even on support, have been asking for. And we have Ludovic Iochem, who's from DNEG, as well as Nick Marshall, who also from DNEG, who were really kind enough to tag team on our new matte painting course. And the idea behind this course is to really take a look at incredibly solid production level matte painting. And in doing so, that's what they're going to concentrate on during the term. They're going to concentrate on one shot. We're not even they're not even going to concentrate on actually doing the compositing aspect of things, but effectively try to provide what they would provide in their day job at Double Negative, which is an outstanding, high-quality 2.5D matte painting, a combination of stills, effects, camera projections, and so forth, in a composite-ready step and ready to go. And again, Mike, I think that's key because as people have been asking for in the suggestion thread and so forth, is something that really does just take a look at the matte painting, not do anything else. You know, I think a lot of times we, in fairness, try to do a cool thing and get too much done in one course, get it all done in one course. But I think this really hits home to what people have been asking for.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, it is the case that, with the 300-level course, you know what most of the buttons are doing, and that's the whole idea of the 300-level course. So you want to start getting into, cool techniques that are more complex, that take longer to get across. I mean, obviously, if you're doing something that's more like 100-level, the examples are going to be simpler, they take less time to show, you're more explaining kind of simple things, so this is how it kind of works. At 300, you do need time to be able to go through those things in some detail.
Yeah, and it's going to be fantastic. We're starting the shoot actually this weekend. We're going to get the match move quickly turned around with those guys. It's not really going to impact the timing, the fact that we haven't done that with these guys, because they're going to work through the director's brief, start blocking out the shot, and be able to start using the elements in rough form that we're actually doing this coming weekend in Mexico City. It's going to be great. And again, both these guys are really excited about it and really excited about sharing their knowledge about the craft, and totally get the idea of the fact that in this case, less is more.
Yeah, plus I think the work of DNEG is just spectacular, and having some really good senior DNEG people teaching this course is exactly what we wanted. DNEG does do really, really good A-grade work, and we're really proud to have that level of professor here at PhD.
Yeah, fantastic and great. And again, it's something we've been working around. We talk about it a lot, that a lot of it has to do with availability for the profs. And in this case, they're just coming off a very big job that actually wrapped Monday, as a matter of fact, for them.
So we can't talk about what that job is, but suffice it to say, it's exactly the sort of job that we have a large story about on FX Guide once it goes public. It's exactly what you think it might be.
Yeah, and that's that, but that's also though. Frankly, it's a really good example of why sometimes we have to hold off on certain projects and certain courses that we do at FX PhD. It's waiting for people whose day job it is. It's much more sensible to do a course right after they deliver than in the throngs of delivery and have the course actually thrown off. So anyway, really excited to I think start off with that one, Mike.
Yeah, no, totally. Now, another 300-level course, which sort of you almost touched on then by way of other things that we're concerned about, is our 300-level Synthize Advanced Survey Techniques. So as many of you will know, Victor Walensky, who's been with us many terms as a very key professor who works both as a supervisor, a flame artist, and obviously very much somebody that understands 3D tracking. Victor loves a good hard problem, but what Victor's doing for you, he's not just sort of hard problems for hard problem's sake. It's the whole idea of using survey data and being able to sort of meld that in with the tracking. So this is increasingly becoming commonplace that we, you know, instead of just having a blank slate and here's your camera, people have actually either surveyed or worked out key dimensions and stuff on the location that you're at. And so being able to provide this information, and we've done a little bit of this in the past, John, and certainly some parts of the course touched on things like LiDAR before, and it proved really popular. But giving that accurate information in terms of exactly how far things are, sometimes down to a sort of a fraction of an inch, can really improve the quality of the track. But more importantly, it's not just that the track is better, the track is more accurate in terms of its real-world dimensions going into all the other problems that may be associated down the line with visual effects. You know, you want to have accurate... you don't want it just being just works, you want it to be able to fit into the pipeline and work really well with everything else and all the other assets. So they've got consistency between shots, and you've got better quality in the same shot.
Yeah, Victor is the man. He likes to call himself a masochist for difficult camera challenges, camera solving challenges, and this is no exception to that. And again, this builds on the 200 level courses that he's done as in Synthize in the past. We try to actually, as part of our curriculum, have a variety of levels in all the courses we have, and of course build from there. And this is an actual extension of other courses that he's done with us in the past. And frankly, Mike, his Victor's 200 level courses, one could easily consider those 300 level courses in among themselves.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it? Because the problem with tracking is oftentimes people just try a track, and if it doesn't kind of work, they try another tracking program, and it's just a bit hit and miss. And the difference between that and being able to get stuff done, especially on like a bigger production, on a small production, well, if you waste a couple of days in the track, it's not going to break the bank. But if you have a pipeline that requires a whole lot of shots to be tracked and you're shaving a day off each track, this can be the difference between profit and loss on a project. Or having a bad track that goes in later into the pipe only to discover that it's not working, and then you have to sort of waste time and go back and do stuff over. I have an enormous amount of respect for getting a really good track out, but it's stunning to me how many people just think that it's, you know, plug and play, just feed it in, press the button, sure it'll work. And, you know, I guess that's testament to how good the tracking departments are in companies. But also we pointed out, John, that tracking is a terrific way to get to be, you know, into a major production, into a major show. If you've got very good tracking skills, you're in demand.
Yeah, exactly. I was actually at IBC and speaking with one of our former members, or current member actually, still a member, has been for a while, and that's kind of become his really ticket into getting in the industry. If you've got a tough camera track, he's the guy you call.
Yeah, it's a great opportunity. I mean, you know, to talk about standing out from the crowd, it really is something that, you know, because not every program, but a lot of programs do have, you know, basic tracking or 3D tracking to a point. But clearly, if you are a good flame artist, you're a good nuke artist, you can use those tools. But oftentimes, when you get to serious work, you need to go way beyond them. And Synthize is a great program. It's a very accessible program as well. So, yeah, it's great. Hey, talk to us about the Premier 300 course, because quite frankly, I want to do that course.
Yeah, this is going to be really a lot of fun. And we've done, again, similar to what I was saying about the Synthetics courses, we've got some really fantastic intermediate Premiere Pro as well as After Effects. Ryan has done some audio classes using Audition. But the idea behind this course is actually take some real-world challenges and some real techniques that Bart has learned through his work actually in Poland, utilizing this in broadcast situations as well as for commercials and online distribution, online projects as well. Kind of work through what I'd like to, it sounds really bad, and I don't mean it to come off this way, but, you know, work through the marketing hype with the actual reality. and it's great, you know, marketing materials, they are what they are. They get you excited about what they are, have. It's really tough to actually convey the full abilities of a feature in marketing. And frankly, maybe sometimes you don't want to convey those full capabilities of that. But the idea behind this one is getting through what you read and the brief introductions that you read on the web, or even the brief free tutorials that are out there on the web to get you up and started and really dive into detail on some of these issues, and working in Premiere Pro, and more importantly, Premiere Pro and the surrounding applications that Adobe has provided tighter and tighter integration for over the last several releases. And I mean, frankly, even starting out in class number one, I think it's going to be interesting to take a look at using Premiere in a shared work environment. And we're not talking anywhere in this case. That is still fairly limited in the number of people who are actually utilizing that. Obviously, those of you who've been members of FXPHD for a while know that Mike is and the team is using that in Sydney. But we're talking about using Premiere Pro in its standard form in collaborative environments. And just, you know, what are the implications of that workflow? I mean, you'll be interested to learn there are some significant implications for metadata that goes along with the files and archiving, how you really need to save your project so that when you restore your project, you have all that shared environment. You know, if you want to take and work with your data from Story and or probably Prelude into Premiere and then have that back again, there are certain ways that you need to work to make sure you have that, because if you do, you might think you do a standard archive, get your stuff off, bring it back, it's all going to be there. Well, that's not necessarily the case. Another good example, I think, is what Adobe introduced right before IBC, and that's the new October release of Creative Cloud with a new Premiere 2 SpeedGrade workflow, which actually looks to be incredibly cool. It's actually kind of a smart way in which they've built it, utilizing the underlying core architecture of format support in Premiere and AME to actually get the job done, so they don't have to build totally new support for formats within SpeedGrade. But there are going to be a lot of, not hoops, but you're going to have to work smartly when you're working this way, I guess you could say. I mean, how does that color data get added to your effects clips? Is it a layer on top? Is it underneath? How do you maintain all this data so that when you make changes in Premiere, you still have that grading data intact? So, I mean, those are just a few of the examples of things that might seem really easy, but the devil is in the details, and knowing those is incredibly important, and that's where this course comes in.
Yeah, not that we're doing it in this course, but you're right, that like anywhere to DaVinci seemed like a really simple task when I was doing testing, or well, not testing, when we've been working. And it is, isn't it? It's connecting up. At the 300 level, you need to be connecting up to a bunch of different programs. And of course, that's also reflected in the Flame 2014 course, because the Flame 2014 course, in exactly sort of a similar vein, will actually cover stuff to do with connecting up from Flame to things like Maya and PF Track and Nuke and After Effects and a bunch of stuff. Because again, in the high end, when you're doing the sort of serious work, John, the need to connect up to other programs, it doesn't matter what app you're in, really.
No, that's certainly true. And I think when we're any of us who have used Flame on the job and are using Flame, and frankly, Smoke, I think this is actually going to be really of interest to a lot of Smoke editors out there as well. There certainly are things in the course that will be Flame specific, but even talking about the 3D tracking he's doing, he's going to be doing 3D tracking externally generally as part of this. So those of you who are using Smoke can actually follow along, because you don't need to have the 3D tracker in Flame. I think he's a really big tool for the job kind of guy. As I think most successful people are. And I think that's going to be a very cool aspect of this course.
Now, that Flame 303 course is the last of our new 300 level courses. But I just want to flag that isn't the end of our courses. We tend on the DoD, as with some of the other stuff we do, to focus on the new courses. But I mean, for example, we have a 300 level course on writing production shaders in RenderMan. And in fact, we have a 200 course on writing physically plausible shaders in RenderMan. We just don't tend to go into those other courses so much, because we've already had a chance to talk about them and highlight them. And quite frankly, John, I don't actually know the count on our total number of courses on offer this term, but it's like more than two.
More than 110.
Okay,
actually,
there you go.
We have close to 30 of the standard courses, and then the remainder, of course, are the Vault courses. And again, for those of you who maybe haven't been members for a while, we've kind of tried to really blur the distinction as much as possible between the standard and Vault courses. And basically, when you join, you get to pick, say, three courses. you can just pick any from what we have on offer, whether the standard Vault. The distinction being the Vault courses don't come with forums. Generally, the profs aren't available to answer questions in the forums, or these courses have just been out for a while. So the forum discussion, one of the great things about FX PhD is we have a lot of members join term after term. So if a course has been out for a while, we don't have as big of a take-up. So the course forum discussions aren't quite as lively. So the Vault courses don't come with forum discussions. And on top of that, you get all 10 classes right away when you join a Vault course. So since they were done in the past, starting with week one, you'll see all your classes. They're ready for you, waiting to be downloaded. But other than that, they're, you know, the way you choose them, the way they work in the membership, a Vault course is what counts as one. A standard course counts as one as part of your total membership.
So as we've been discussing 300, I guess we'll work our way down the line and start discussing some of the 200 level courses that are new. So in no particular order, I'm involved with a 200 level course in addition to being involved, of course, with Background Fundamentals, which is our free weekly kind of magazine class that comes out. So that doesn't count as part of the ones that John was just referring to. You get that as standard. But there's another course, which is a DOP course that I am involved in very much with Ben Allen. Now, this is on moving the camera. Now, some of you will have remembered that we did a lighting course with Ben Allen. That was terrifically helpful for a whole bunch of people. But lighting really needs to have the other half of the equation, which is the blocking and the framing, and especially the stuff that involves moving the camera, because moving the camera really adds production value. So I guess at NAB this year, we, you know, probably the hottest product was the Movi, and it brought into sharp relief just how much cool stuff is happening in the area of gripping. Now, depending what country you're in, and I ran across this problem when dealing with the guys up at XILM at 3210, we kept on talking about, and I had some confusion, so I'll just explain the term. In Australia and in England, the gaffer handles the lights, the grip only handles the camera. If you ever want to move the camera in any way, shape or form, that's the grip department. And so it's that definition that I'm using when I'm talking about gripping, though I believe in the US it is not uncommon to have a grip term referring to someone that touches lights and camera. But anyway, let's stick with the UK model. Gripping is a bunch of really cool tech, not least of which, because the cameras are getting smaller and lighter. And so this enables a whole different sort of level of stuff. But it also means that stuff that was previously out of people's grasp in terms of budget or affordability is now completely moving into that zone. So, for example, a Steadicam used to be really big because the big, you know, film cameras were so bulky and heavy, hence everything was really expensive, hence not many people had any exposure. Now Steadicam running an Epic or a 5D or something is way smaller, much more affordable, and much more interesting. And so we're going to be covering all that stuff, as well as the theory of compositing, framing, and blocking. And I want to get into this in some depth. So some of the classes won't be very gear intensive at all. We'll be looking at, like, okay, well, I want to do a standard interview. How do I set up my cameras and how do I frame those? Now, how do I make it more interesting? Can I lift it? And each week, one of the things we're going to try to do, which I always love, is I'll give Ben deliberately hard problems. And John, I had a great one. We've just filmed it. It's going to be coming out, I think, in week two or three. But, you know, it's like, here's a classic thing. How would you solve it? Would be pretty easy and pretty standard. So I sort of come up with diabolical variations on that that would just be a massive problem to any DOP. And even though Ben finds this really amusing, he himself is the first to say that the job of any DOP is often creative problem solving. So throwing these curveballs at him is both fun to do and great to see them being solved.
He's like, really, Mike? Seriously?
Yeah. Well, for example, we're doing an interview stuff and it was pretty, you know, it was good, and we're doing a lot of interesting stuff with interviews. And then I said, okay, so what if we wanted to interview people that weren't exactly the same height? And before he could even answer, I said, let's try that out. And I got myself and someone who is 10 and a half inches shorter than me. And he was like, okay, well, we'd solve this by having them sit down. I said, yes, but I'm not going to let you do that. So it was like, well, how do you frame up these shots when, you know, literally it's over a head height difference between your two people for an interview, which is, you know, the sort of thing that happens if you are out doing stuff. Like, let's say we're at a trade show and suddenly you were presented with that problem. And I'm not exceptionally tall, but certainly I've interviewed people both taller and shorter than myself. And it is hard to get that looking. I mean, the last thing you want to do is produce something that looks comical or odd that would draw attention away from what is often a really serious subject matter. So that's the kind of example of stuff away from the tech that we'll be addressing in the course.
One might also run into that situation if they were, say, filming the O-Weeks piece with Don from Shotgun Software as well, for instance. who happens to be considerably taller than I am. In my case, I took the easy sit-down route. But yes, interesting. That sounds like a lot of fun. I think that'll be a nice aspect of the course. And because, again, the challenge is a great, you know, I've had this philosophically about teaching and learning software, and it's why we like having profs who or have day jobs in the field. And I think you really learn the software when you're pushed by someone else to do something you ordinarily would not do. You know, I think when we're in a software application, we're going to do a comp the same way, but you don't really learn how to do something until you have a client over your shoulder getting you to do something that you haven't done before or something really difficult. And that's kind of what you're doing with Ben.
Yeah, yeah. And the other thing is, if you watch the Ogweek video, you'll see our do-it-yourself Movi, which was not to take anything away from the real Movi, which is a great tool, and we'll be looking at that, the production model. But we also literally made our own, fully working parts made in China. Like Jim jumped on and designed some stuff in some CAD software and set it off to get it computer milled and stuff cut out and software out of Eastern Europe and put it all together, and it's working a treat. It's hysterically fun working with it as well. So anyway, all that coming up in the 200 level DRP course.
Well, I think one 200 level course I'm especially excited about for a number of reasons is our new motion graphics MoGraph 212 course, production tested MoGraph with Ryan Summers. And excited about it for several reasons. First of all, the course is just going to be brilliant. I think he's got a lot of really cool stuff to share. And when you see the week video, the projects that he's going to be sharing, I think you guys will say, okay, this is the kind of stuff I aspire to work. But a very cool aspect of this course is also the fact that Ryan is actually one of the charter members of FXPhD. I met him in Chicago in the very first term of FXPhD. And now after 30 terms, which you accurately talked about, it's been, you know, almost 8 years, right, of production experience for Ryan on the job training and now serving as a director at Imaginary Forces.
And what a great company. Company.
Exactly. And he's really loving it. And so much of what, you know, so much of what he learned and many things that he learned to get up to speed and actually center on working in Cinema 4D were thanks to FXPhD and courses that, say, Tim Clapham taught. You know, he was in Tim's very first class at FXPhD as well, since Ryan was in from the early days, and has kind of taken that and really moved forward in his career and works on some really high-end projects. You may have seen the member profile we did of Ryan probably, what, about a month ago, a month or two ago. We can now consider it a prof profile, I guess, at this point. But he's really doing some amazing work at Imaginary Forces, some really great design projects, some really great, actually, animation projects that he's working on in Cinema 4D, as well as, of course, the Pacific Rim project that we highlighted as part of that FXPhD member profile. But again, the key here is he's going to basically share tips and techniques that he has learned on the job that really helped him in his workflow when dealing with clients and dealing with changes, making things flexible, as well as just making them, frankly, look incredibly sexy and great from a graphics perspective, really doing those nice tweaks that you need to do to take your graphics to the next level. And again, he's got a great plot out of courses. He's left a little bit of flexibility towards the end to kind of, he's really open to getting feedback from the members as part of the course to see what they'd like to see, because you've got a lot of great projects that he can share with. And this is going to be brilliant. And it's funny, it was funny on Twitter. Basically, you know, my Twitter alerts for FXPhD mentions actually basically had to turn them off on my phone at some point on Tuesday after we announced the course, because people were so excited that he was doing the course with us and looking forward to his course at FXPhD. So great to have him in the fold, effectively come full circle from charter term member to prof.
Yes, absolutely. We also have a new Modo course, which is happening this term. Now, we've been doing a bunch of more work with Modo, and actually, interestingly, I've been certainly exploring a bunch of stuff to do with Modo and design, and that's reflected in this coming FX Guide TV episode, where I speak to creature designer Neville Page, who's just legendary, who says quite openly in the interview that when somebody asks him, you know, what software should they learn, what does he use, he just point blank points them to Modo. So we're really pleased to have a new Modo course this term here at FXPhD.
Yeah, Mike. And I believe you have enjoyed Pat's first two courses at FX PhD, I believe. We both have taken those introduction to Modo to kind of get a speed up on that application. I really like the way he teaches his classes.
Yeah, though I've got to say, like he got pretty serious in 100. So, you know, I'm looking forward to a 200. It's not like he was pulling any punches in 100. I was playing with Modo, obviously, you know, going along with the courses, trying to get myself up to speed. And I was like, whoa, slow up there for a second. I'll just back that up. What? So, it was good. And yes. this course, though, is not just a general Modo course. It focuses more on dynamic simulation and particle effect stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's kind of a nice combo to what he's done in the past. Obviously, a lot of people have loved some of the modeling capabilities in Modo and things like that. But I think this will be kind of a nice subject area to dive into and see how far you can take this, especially in combination potentially with some of the stuff that is being done in Nuke and compositing. I think it's going to be great.
So we have obviously a bunch of other 200 level courses, Maya courses, other stuff to do with motion graphics, just editing courses, Houdini courses, several Houdini courses at the 200 level actually, Hero, just a bunch of other stuff, all of those listed over at fxphd.com. But if we just keep on going with the new courses, I think we're out of 200s now, and I just wanted to move to the 100 level courses, which as I indicated with the Modo course, aren't for someone that's a complete novice. I mean, the whole point of our courses is you're probably in the industry, so you understand a bunch of the concepts, but you really want to learn a new application. So, you know, for example, if I knew something about an area, like I certainly knew about 3D, but didn't know about Modo, that's a great explanation of why a 100-level course is for you. It assumes you don't know the software, but no one's going to explain to you at a sort of a talking-down level what 3D actually is. And John, you mentioned a second ago interviewing Don Parker. I sussed that that may have been to do with the course.
Yes, yeah, so it's our new shotgun course. We're really excited to have that in that course on offer this term. Those of you who have worked at major facilities around the world in the production pipeline, I can pretty much venture to say you've probably dealt with shotgun at some point or another. It definitely is the professional standard for production workflow throughout the major facilities. I'm talking, you know, big film facilities as well as just large commercial facilities. But what's interesting about shotgun is in the last couple, several releases and within the last couple of years, they have really tried to work on making the software more approachable to studios of a smaller size. And I'm talking, say, between, you know, 20 to 50. And right now, the sweet spot is still probably at the higher end of that, towards around the 40 to 50 people. But they have people who are using shotgun in facilities with as little as 5 to 10 people at this point in time. They introduced a new pricing structure, which is based on the person per month, so you can turn people on and off, ramp up and down for jobs, as well as introduced a lot of things in the software that makes it easier for people to install and deal with who don't have a dedicated technical staff to help you install the software. So the aim behind this is what we're going to do is we're going to basically give a boot camp of sorts about building a modern pipeline in shotgun is what we're calling the course. And it's going to work out with fairly much the basics, which is getting up and running, getting your data in, and then progress into the really outstanding review workflow, which is really, I feel, where the product totally shines. The ability to submit your work to the review panel, do interactive review or review sessions with the supervisor or producer or something like that, have comments made and go back and iterate and so forth. So that's a central part, so we're kind of devoting two classes to that. And then after that, I'll talk about one of the really new exciting developments in the product, and that's Toolkit, which are effectively, a bunch of modules, I guess you could say, a bunch of different ways of doing things that basically they have created a lot of small tools and with the foundation laid on that, so you don't need to know a lot of internal coding to get those done, but you can easily customize them to your own needs to, say, interact with, say, Nuke or Maya, or, you know, share project files between those applications really easily. So we're going to work for about four classes talking about Toolkit, and in fact, installing Toolkit, because at this point, installing Toolkit is not the easiest thing to do. They've made the decision to actually build a lot of very cool engine and apps and launchers and things like that, and not spend their time building a really slick installer. If they built a really slick installer and didn't have anything to install, it wouldn't really be that compelling. And I kind of agree with them on that. So work through that. And then towards the end, they're actually going to help wrangle in some of their top clients around the world who have customized Shotgun and actually show you what you can do in sensible terms to really take and make Shotgun your own and see how far you can actually take Shotgun and have it interact with your own custom pipeline of tools that you've written in your facility. Now, point out, this course is a little bit different. And a lot of times we like having a professor who say, in this case, it'd be some engineering or technical person at a facility kind of work through Shotgun. But in talking with the folks there, it made a lot of sense because every pipeline is so unique and different. It's really a bit difficult to kind of apply that in general terms. And so they kind of felt because they're in the perspective of actually seeing how people are implementing Shotgun in a variety of different ways with a variety of different tools and a variety of different needs, that they have some sensible best practices that they feel can apply to someone who's kind of starting to examine this. And again, starting to examine this on a slightly smaller scale. If you were looking at this, say, at your, you know, smallish size facility implementing this, you want an efficient way to keep track of scheduling and review elements. This course is kind of for you. So it's going to be some folks from Shotgun all around the world. They have people in London and Vancouver, each with very special skills teaching these modules. And then later in the course, that's where we're going to bring in the people who are actually using it on the job and seeing how they build upon those tools and the framework, and incredible, I mean, I don't want to just call it a framework, that's ridiculous, just the incredible foundation that the Shotgun provides for production management in your facility.
Yeah, I've got to say, having been at Image Engine in Canada and looking at the Elysium pipeline, I can just really echo those remarks. It was, I guess one phrase that really stuck with me from that was this idea that they felt like they were punching above their weight because of Shotgun, but their pipeline was so specific, in the case of Elysium, to Elysium's problems, right? It's like they adapted right. it. So, you know, you would be, well, okay, well, I've learned everything from Elysium. Now, let's say Image Engine goes on to, you know, Stars and Stripes, you know, whatever it is, the film. I'm making that up. But whatever it is, they would then have to sort of re-jig, which it's designed for, their pipeline for the specific requirements of that film. And I think the other thing about Shotgun that's really interesting is it started out that Shotgun was aiming to be able to have departments talk to each other because it was a bit like, you know, this department needs to know what this one's doing because it's a scheduling problem. And then it became, well, we've actually got our office in, you know, wherever it is, Vancouver, and our office in LA, and we're trying to coordinate between the two offices. And so that became an issue. And the other thing I got out of where it's going with Shotgun is now this idea that, well, I'm going to do that, but I'm also going to coordinate some other companies. In the case of Image Engine, they had like mm-hmm. three other companies working on Elysium, just doing shots and specific tasks and things that were isolated from the main production. I don't think we're fully there yet in that you'd have an integrated Shotgun across multiple companies that would interconnect, but it's going that way. And that's really impressive, the thought that you could, you know, start to get to that. And I've got to say, John, anything we can do to be more efficient, to help these companies be more profitable and, you know, keep going and do good work, anything that puts the money on the screen and isn't lost in kind of clutter and problems behind is something that this industry needs more than ever.
I think you'll watch, those of you who kind of watch this class and are curious, I think a lot of people who are going to view this class and from a curiosity and keeping up to date on knowledge type standpoint, I think you're going to be really able to see how this can help you with your efficiency within your studio, big or small. I think this notion, and Shotgun's aware of this too, is that the medium to small size facilities can actually benefit from the software tremendously. So I think that you're right. I think people really see how clear that is after watching this course.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I'm going to flag a course that I'm super enthusiastic about. God, I've wanted to do this for like the last at least a few terms, I think since the beginning of the year almost. We want to start doing some game engine courses, and I'm just really up on real-time game engines. This is something that's a big passion for me at the moment. And so we're starting with an Unreal Games Engine course. This is kind of a introduction to how to animate or produce previs or stuff. I really think, and I think we sort of, if you read the description of the course, you'll see this point come through. You can't be blind to game engines right now. There is so much stuff that's happening in terms of the games industry itself and in visual effects using game engines and where the whole industry is going as those two merge. It used to be, we'd say, you know, if you worked in games, you wanted to work in film, and very few people made the crossover and vice versa. Now we're seeing these presentations done. I mean, there was one that was on the net, nothing to do with our course, about ILM and doing real-time stuff using some Star Wars characters mm-hmm. that Kim did. And it was just, you know, like there's that's just a bunch of these great examples of very serious companies with very serious visual effects supervisors looking at what they can do with game engines. And that feeds into doing on-set stuff. We've seen some amazing use in game engines with being able to visualize for directors and even DOPs when there isn't stuff on set. There's a ton of uses of game engines. So how do you get into that? It's just been the problem, right? It's a bit of a... Well, if you're into game engines, great. But if you're not, how do you kind of get up and up to speed? And so John is doing this course. He's John Gress is somebody that's taught a lot. He's a very good teacher. And this is going to move pretty quickly, this course, to give you sort of what you don't know across the board as you'll gather when you watch the video. So sometimes in the videos, you might get the impression that we're looking at someone's showreel and that, you know, the course will be very different from that. But this is... And I went through this with John. There's a bunch of stuff in here and some assets we're going to be able to access that will allow you to really get somewhere serious. And I hope that you guys respond to this, because I'd love to see us do more in this area. It's a big question mark, you know, whether you guys are going to respond to doing some game engine stuff. So any feedback you've got, anything you'd like to see, any ways you think this might be more relevant or done better in the future, not that I think this is going to be a cracker of a course, but just I'm saying I really would welcome any feedback you guys can give us, because I think it's just a really important area that people need to get across. It falls completely in the category of, you know, if you may be focused on one particular thing, but you know that you need to know this, but you sort of, how are you going to find time to get up to speed? This would be the course for you. And as I say, this is using the Unreal Games Engine.
Well, I'm excited as well about that course, and I think the people who watch the A Week video are going to go, well, this will be cool. I think once they see that, they're going to want to definitely sample the first two classes in that course, and frankly, any course that you're borderline interested in. We really recommend that those of you who are members take the time before you choose which courses you're going to lock yourself into. Watch the first two classes. You might find something you're like, oh, this isn't at all what I expected, or this is really... something that I'm interested in. So take the time, watch the first two classes, and then lock in your courses as part of the term.
So I just want to talk, if we can, about Lucas Martel's 103 texturing, lighting, and finishing a short film, which maybe the numbers don't quite indicate this, but this is part two of part one. Part one was called 102. Okay, so forget the numbering for a second. Lucas started doing this animation course, and we said, we're really interested in how to direct an animated film. Like, that's what we were interested in. And we started doing this last term, and Lucas and I spoke, and John and I, we all sort of, well, let's do a short film. Let's do something that's really short, like maybe 60 seconds. So it's in the zone that it's achievable inside the parameters. But we're not going to focus on the rendering. We're not going to focus on all the sort of texturing and stuff, because we've got courses that cover a lot of that stuff. How do you direct a short film? How do you kind of put it together? So starting with a blank piece of paper, that's what Lucas did. Well, of course, it was about halfway through, everyone started saying, you are going to finish this film, right? there is going to be a part two that shows this finished. And we were like, well, it wasn't really the plan. The plan was to show you how to direct. But as we've been very keen to do in the last few terms, we said, okay, well, if that's what you guys want. So we sat down and worked out, could we, in a second part, this 103, actually then finish that film out. Now, in the video that you'll see in the O Week video, it isn't finished. I just want to make that point. It's sort of three quarters or maybe halfway there. So I'm not saying that what you're going to see in the video is as good as it will get, because the nature of our courses is that we don't completely finish them before the term starts. But we wanted to get this a sizable way along to give you a hint as to where it's going. So if you didn't do the 102 course and you're thinking, damn, that sounds really good, I wish I'd sort of looped around, what we've got is the full repeat of the 102 in addition to the 103. So if this is new to you and you sort of thought, gosh, I missed out on that, it's okay. You can go back and do this term both the courses or whatever you want, but we've got the 102 and the 103 both with Lucas. He happens to use Softimage for the just sort of physical stuff that he does, but this is very much not a course on Softimage so much, or XSI. It's a course on, you know, how do you get something looking funny? And if you listen to the DOD regularly, you know, I had a huge rave about his thing on just blinks. And he was like 20 minutes on blinks, and I just found it compelling. And so as he goes forward with our cranky old tree and its kites and balloons and stuff that is going on, you'll get to sort of see this finishing out. And I loved the response to the first half of this, and I know you did, John, so we're great to see Lucas coming back for part two.
Yeah, very much so. And in the last course we want to talk about, our final 100 level course and our final new course for the term, is as I was thinking just now, it's kind of a opposite throwback to one of the courses we offered in our first term of FX PhD, which is After Effects for Compositors. And now in term 30, we have Nuke for After Effects. This kind of came across in talking to Josh, but also some visits that I made to several motion graphics design-based houses here in LA in the time that I've spent here in the last year. And I've been struck by how many people are using After Effects to do really outstanding work. It's a great tool. And they have a copy of Nuke available, or several copies of Nuke available at the facility, and they're actually effectively using it as a full-speed playback device to actually watch their clips. So they're using Nuke as a player, in essence. And so I start talking with Josh, and it's like, you know, it'd be really cool to actually come up with a course to actually show some talented, very talented After Effects artists how they might execute the same composite in Nuke. Because there is, frankly, a bit of a learning curve going from a layer-based compositor with a 3D environment that is okay in After Effects, but it's certainly not a 3D environment built from the ground up, taking those skills and converting them into skills you would need to actually do your compositing and approach it in Nuke, where, frankly, many things will make a lot more sense to do your composite in Nuke. You'll, of course, have lots of things that make sense to do in After Effects as well. But again, this idea behind this course is say, hey, look, here is where Nuke actually really shines. If you're using After Effects to do your comps, check out this. This is how you do it in Nuke. Here's the buttons that you would find that are similar in After Effects. These are what these buttons are called in Nuke, and hopefully enable you to transfer your skills into the node-based compositor and actually know which app to pick when you have something come in. Is this a job or a shot that I want to accomplish in After Effects, or is this a job or a shot that I want to accomplish in Nuke? And once again, we've talked about this a lot already, but this 100-level course is something that certainly expects a significant amount of knowledge in compositing and compositing in After Effects. This is not something just to teach you Nuke from the ground up. We actually have a Nuke course from that's called Nuke 104. But this is meant to take someone who has lots of experience utilizing After Effects, does great work in After Effects, but how you transfer that skill set into the tool set that's available in Nuke. And I think it's great to have Josh back. His course was a lot of fun last term. I think he brings a cool perspective to things, as well as his knowledge that he has of After Effects. He's a great guy to teach the course.
Yeah, it's a classic 100-level course where you don't know the app, but you're wanting to, you know, explore, but obviously you understand the principles involved. And I find that to be a really valuable thing, because it is hard. I certainly don't want to waste my time with somebody explaining to me the fundamentals of a subject that I know, but I just don't know how to apply it in this particular area. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun.
So we do have to finish up, and time is short, but we can't stop the DoD without flagging the VPN software, because the VPN software is a really key part of one of the advantages of working inside the PhD structure. Because we're term-based, because we have a sort of a more formal structure than maybe you could do off just a tutorial off YouTube, it means we got the ability to offer you access to non-watermarked versions of just a huge amount of software, a vast amount of production software that would let you try things out, produce things for your showreel. Obviously, it's not designed for commercial use. You're not meant to use it in a job, but it allows you to properly use the software so that you can assess whether or not this is something you want to do, so that you can use it to build up a showreel, so you can maybe join somewhere that has a bunch of software, or just because you feel like this is maybe one of those areas that I think that I'd like to do this, but before I commit, I want to spend a bit of time. And of course, during the course of the term, you could spend months with some software and really get to know it before you had to actually commit. And John, obviously you manage the VPN software, as we've mentioned in the past. You might want to run through some of the key apps available this term.
Yeah, exactly. If you go to the FAQs page, FAQS/, you'll see there's a listing of software that we have available on the VPN, but it starts for just upped our ability with the folks at Develop Arnold. So we have Arnold Renderer available. That's actually a separate download, but we just can get a copy of that for you. We've got Cinema 4D, Hero, Houdini FX, Katana, Mari, Maya, Mocha Pro, Modo, Mudbox, Nuke, RenderMan Pro Server, and RenderMan Studio. We've got Shotgun. For the people who are taking that course, they provide us, our members, an extended trial available to you through the end of January 2014. So normally it's 30 days, but you have it until that time period. We've also got Softimage, SpeedTree, as well as V-Ray 2.0. It's really a fantastic variety of software. There are more common ones like the Creative Cloud stuff. We feel that's kind of accessible for you guys already. We're talking, these programs are significantly different from that. But again, I think it's really one thing members really like about FXPhD is having access to apps that they might not otherwise have access to.
Well, all of that and more in terms of information over at fxphd.com. If you've got any questions, you can ask things. If you're not a member yet and you look at our forums, the forums are behind the wall of membership. So I would counsel you to, if we're talking about the members and you know how much stuff's happening in the forums, somebody once commented to me, well, I looked at the forums, it didn't seem very active. It's like, well, that's simply because you weren't a member yet and you couldn't see the forums. That would be the reason. So, yeah, but obviously a lot of interaction happens in the forums, which is really, really valuable. And we'd welcome any comments, criticisms. As I said, anything on specific courses, of course, we expect to be posted in the forums. But as John, I think, outlined earlier, there is threads in there about some of the things that people wanted that has been a constant source of inspiration for what we've then spent months and months pulling together, for example, this term. And a lot of these courses in this term, we direct correlation back to members asking for them. I mean, it's just, you know, we're here to serve you guys.
Yep, very much so. So anyway, thanks you guys so much for taking time to listen. I hope you're excited as much about the new term as both Mike and I are. It's been, as every term is, a tremendous amount of work to get together and give birth to it on the first. It's really exciting for us, and hope it is for you as well. But hope to see you in the forums.
See you guys.
Thanks for listening. This podcast is copyright FX PhD.